You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK.
The UFC Buzz Podcast with Gareth A. Davis. Exclusive to William Hill. Listen online at audioboom.com or subscribe at iTunes by searching William Hill Podcasts. I'm Gareth A. Davis. You're listening to another issue of the UFC Buzz Podcast for William Hill. Well, I've got to say, this is one of the most extraordinary podcasts I've ever done on a UFC event. We've had smash and grab raid on New York, and now it's escape from New York as UFC 223 kicks off in the worst possible way. Three fights are off the card. Conor McGregor was running rampant in New York earlier today. Artem Lobov's fight has gone as a result of his involvement with Conor McGregor. He was due to be fighting Alex Caceres. Michael Chiesa is off the card, cut by glass. You know what it is. They're still, I believe, looking for an opponent for Anthony Pettis. That's possible, but not. Ray Borg and Brandon Moreno are off the cards. But as I say, UFC 223, the first ever event in Brooklyn, in the Barclays Center, Saturday night, the seventh event since New York became the state that sanctioned MMA, one of the very few and the very last. We've got to talk about the news before we go to the odds for William Hill and the fights. Joining me this week is the brilliant, the man like me who loves to write the interesting stories about the people who do the unusual and the orthodox. It's the one and only, flat cap, beautiful smile, square jawed. It's Chuck Mindenhall. How are you?
Listen to that intro. What's up, Gareth?
I'm good, thanks. I mean, like you, I'm sitting here, not really, I'm wondering if I'm watching a script gone wrong in Hollywood where it goes from kind of fantasy fight story, Rocky style, the Cinderella man, this, that and the other. Suddenly we're watching kind of a headless horror movie where we've watched Conor McGregor today pick up an iron fence or a steel fence and throw it at a bus when It's an extraordinary event. Listen, in the real context of anything, it's not like he's put a bomb under anything or he's acting as a terrorist or he's trying to kill people. But this is insane stuff going on here, Chuck. What did you make of this when you first came across it today?
Well, my first thought, man, was like, if you remember, Dana White on Wednesday had said something along the lines of, I really hope Conor shows up. We didn't even know if he'd be in Brooklyn for this card to begin with. And so when I saw a couple tweets trickle in that basically said that he had made an appearance in Brooklyn and there was an incident backstage, I assumed it was more in the realm of, you know, he got into an argument or a scuffle, because we've seen him in those types of situations and not afraid to put himself in that situation. Yeah. And so I just assumed that that was what was going on until I kind of got some more context. And it just got more and more dour, and as those videos came out, man, it went from being kind of humorous, almost like a humorous and exhilarating thing, to something that was like, wow, what a huge black eye on MMA, and what is this guy doing? You know, this guy who's the star of our sport, you know, that we've seen transcend it and just do historical things, why is he doing this? That was the first thing that went through my mind. And from there, man, it's just been kind of, unpacking it as the news comes along here.
You and I have both been journalists a long time. You're a senior writer at obviously, MMA Fighting. And you and I have been covering mixed martial arts pretty much the same period, the last, I'd say, 12 years in depth, you know, as full-time kind of journalists on the sport, considered, you know, analysts and so on of the sport, and hopefully respected after that period of time. But I've got to say, Chuck, I was there in Dublin in November, and I think a very similar thing happened with Mark Goddard and Charlie Ward in that Bama stroke Bellator octagon. And I saw it again today, and it's extraordinary. No one's getting hold of McGregor, pinning him on his back, putting handcuffs on him and locking him in a cell. And it's time for that to happen. Do you know what I mean? Someone needs the law needs to make him come to his senses, because people are, they did it in, and I don't mean this in a bad way to Conor, because I really like Conor, but he's clearly out of control in a kind of egomaniac type way, and I mean it in a kind way. He, like you say, he entranced us. No one, people usher him out the way, but they need to, I know, because he's got a group of 10, 12, 15 people with him. If hands start to go, it's going to be a mass brawl. So I know people are just trying to keep it calm. But for his own sanity, the best place for him is back in the gym and back in the ring and back in the octagon for me.
I agree with you 100%, man. And it's been, this has been one of the stranger things. As you just mentioned, we've been covering this sport about the same time, and I think that's about right, 12 years.
Yeah.
We've seen a lot. We've seen a lot of chaos in this game.
Yeah.
You know, crazy things that would never happen in other sports that really distinguish MMA from other sports, not necessarily for the better a lot of times, but this is by far one of the craziest things I've seen. Just because it is Conor McGregor. It'd be one thing if it was like, you know, Jason Mayhem Miller or somebody with a record of, you know, just kind of doing crazy things. Even a Diaz brother. Just guys who've been in strange scrapes before. But this is a guy who is on top of the sport and acting in that way. And I think we've seen it coming because he's been a guy who's had an escalation through his whole career. A very fast escalation. He made a lot of money very quickly. We've seen him purchase a lot of stuff and just take on a different attitude. And each time he does something, he wants to conquer something that seems even more removed and more far-fetched. And it's a dangerous, dangerous thing because there's only a finite amount of. I mean, he's pretty much hit the gold that he's going to with that Mayweather fight. He can always make money. You know, keep fighting, but he's never, I don't think he ever does any better than that, you know what I mean? That was kind of the goal. So you wonder where his mentality is at this point. Did he conquer it all? Like, it seems like he believes he's above the law and invincible. And unfortunately, we're seeing him crumble before our eyes, and it's sad, man. I'd have to say that I have a pang of sadness, even when you mentioned that Charlie Ward and the Mark Goddard thing. That thing was surreal, too, to see him go in there and act berserker like that and think, like, wow, does he think he's above MMA at this point? It just, all this behavior, man, it's starting to add up, and I think that this one, unfortunately, is going to stay with him a long time, and I think this one is, I mean, we'll see how it plays out, but there might be some serious, serious consequences for him on this
one. Well, he's thrown a guardrail at the bus, or bus full of fighters. He's wrecked three fights on the card, including one of his teammates' fights. He's likely to be sued, I imagine, by Michael Chiesa because, you know, there's all kinds of lawsuits that are going to be thrown at him now. And, you know, there's the police apparently searching to interview him. I don't know if it's actually a warrant for his arrest. That we don't know officially that the police, I don't think, have put out this. But Dana White saying a warrant has been issued for McGregor's arrest.
Yeah, they've been saying that the police are actively looking for him to at least question him and all that stuff.
Listen, here's my scenario. He'll bust into the Barclays Center on Saturday night. He'll be arrested just outside the Octagon. There isn't an odds on that, but it wouldn't surprise me, Chuck.
Yeah, I mean, you said it, man. I don't know. It's this whole thing. This has been one of the weirdest fight weeks forever, and I know that you know, the premise of this show is to kind of break down these fights, but it's so crazy that everything we look at in the eye changes before our eyes. Like, we've had a fight fall out, you know, the main event, and morph into something completely different, and then all of a sudden here we are, you know, losing three fights in the course of the day over somebody's, like, tantrum, essentially. It's just, what a nutty thing.
Well, it is completely nutty, and weirdly, one other event. Obviously, and we're going to come to Tony Ferguson in a minute, but the only other event that I've been involved in, which is so bizarre, and maybe even very much sadder than this, was the bizarre nature of the event last year in Las Vegas in October. I came out for it to cover it specifically after the mass shootings from the Mandalay Bay.
Right.
I mean, that's the bizarrest MMA week I've ever been involved in.
And that's just a geographical association, right? Like, so you go there and there's this very somber mood and homage and all that stuff. This is directly related to the sport, and this is one of those situations where, you know, we know for sure, like, mainstream media, or, you know, the broader public will only peek in at the sport when something is going on worthwhile. And unfortunately, this is Conor's one of those names who's transcended the sport. People will peek in on the sport and see this type of thing. And it always sucks because the sport has kind of had a bad, you know, it's had a rough little slide here of late, you know, and this was one of those feel-good events up until today. And that's unfortunate, man, because I feel like, you know, maybe the need for attention from one guy just took, you know, got rid of some of the other people, but basically usurped, you know, the guys who are fighting on this card.
Well, you've got the right, let's go to the card, because, you know, obviously Tony Ferguson's out. Fourth time that the Tony Ferguson, Khabib Nurmagomedov fight has been withdrawn for one reason or another. Both sides involved, and of course, Dana White saying he's never going to match the two again. He might, but the thing is this. Conor McGregor's in town trying to pick a fight with Khabib Nurmagomedov when he could have got in the octagon and done it for probably $10 or $15 million they would have given for it. But it's so bizarre, this. But I'm convinced that something interesting may come out of this. I don't know what your take on this. I'm going to come to, obviously, Ferguson's been replaced by MMA, blessed MMA, the kid Holloway, and who I think is a brilliant, brilliant fighter, Max Holloway. And I, just incidentally, to digress, I've just done a big interview with Mark Goddard for Fighters Only magazine. Please read this, everyone listening, next month, because it's in the magazine next month. He's fascinating on McGregor. He says some really interesting things, and thankfully he delivers the truth about how he feels about the lack of respect that Conor McGregor is showing.
He's always fascinating, by the way. Like, Mark Goddard is always fascinating. He thinks of everything from elevation, including the things he's directly related in, so that I look forward to reading that.
No, well, I'll tell you what's really interesting. He tells me about his own life as well, about living beside Glasgow Zoo when he was growing up and climbing into the rhino enclosure at night with his friends and his brother and his cousin and seeing who could go nearest the rhino before it charged them. Really little fun things like that. Really funny stuff that you wouldn't know about Mark. He was an electronic music DJ years ago in the 80s and going to warehouse raves. It's really, really interesting. It's Mark the Man. So it's a fascinating, it's one that you would enjoy and one that you would have written as well.
Yeah. MMA is definitely one of those places where we can all gather, and all the fringe elements like that, man, which is crazy because he's a stand-up referee and he's such a, you know, they all have backstories like this. It's pretty amazing.
It is, and how he found his way into the sport. Well, he's brilliant on McGregor, though. Let's go to the three fights we're just going to look at. We're going to have to leave the Anthony Pettis lightweight fight for now. Of course, that was Michael Chiesa against Anthony Pettis. A great and fascinating matchup for me. I favoured Pettis in that, but obviously he's going to have a different opponent now. But let's go first to the lightweight fight, Chuck, between Al Iaquinta and Paul Felder, both men who I like very much. Felder is evens with William Hill for the victory. Al Iaquinta 4-5. Very interesting, very interesting 155 matchup, isn't it?
Yeah, I love this fight, man. You know, back in the day, maybe 10 years ago, the UFC would always book their events, their pay-per-view events, where they would have a really good, you know, a good headliner in terms of a title fight, and then they would have maybe a very good contenders fight with some names on it second, but there'd always be one of these deep value fights in there somewhere, and I feel like that's what we're getting with this particular one. You know, Paul Felder, he's finally come into his own. I think when he came into the UFC, where I was waiting personally to see, I knew a little bit about him coming in, and especially about, you know, he's a very charismatic guy, a very well-spoken, but we knew he could fight too. But he kind of had a, you know, hit or miss outing. Like he would show up one fight and then the next one he might get beat. Well, now he's reeled off three fights in a row, and he's looked very good. He didn't lose in 2017.
But I think also, Chuck, I think also it is the perfect, also his work under Duke Rufus has changed him for me as well.
Yes, absolutely, man. And I think that, you know, just going into this fight, like it's a ballsy fight, man, because he's going against a guy, Al Iaquinta, who hasn't lost, I think, since 2014. I know he hasn't fought a ton in that time, but he has been very, very good in the times we've seen him. And, you know, you're going into his backyard, in Iaquinta's backyard, fighting in New York. So, to me, man, I feel like Al Iaquinta will want to go out there and leave it all in the cage. And I think Paul Felder, that's just his natural makeup to fight like that. So I think you're just going to see two guys go in there and really, and you know, go right at each other. And anytime you get that set up, man, it's great.
Yeah, well, Iaquinta's a very good mover on the feet, and Paul Felder's got fantastic footwork, and his striking's only got better under Duke Rufus, and he knows when to go in for that moment of attack now. And I think his counter-punching has really come on, and he was just a stand-up. Yeah. He was like an Irish guy taking someone on out a two minutes notice out the back of a pub because they wanted to challenge the guy and he'll never back down. No, but that's how he used to fight. He'd almost take...
Yeah, it is 100%.
He'd take two soft ones to give a very big hard one. But the thing is with him, I think as well, I'll tell you what I like about Felder, Chuck. Outside Joe Rogan and John Anik, I think, of the cage side, of the Octagon side commentators, I think he's probably the best analyst out there. And I like his post-fight interviews as well. I think he really is of the very, very highest quality in terms of that job as well.
He's got a lot of dynamics, man. And I don't know if you know this. He was actually a stage actor.
No, I do know. He qualified. He was going to be in movies.
So he was in the thespian arts as well. So I feel like he just kind of knows how to handle himself under, you know, stressful situations. It all plays in, you know. He rises to the moment, and I dig that about him. But I love, like, what you mentioned. We've seen him countering more, and I think he's been a lot more patient. And he certainly knows how to break down an opponent. And I'm sure he's done his homework on what to expect from Iaquinta. So I think we'll see a pretty good showing from him.
I've got Felder winning by, as I say, the odds with William Hill again. 4-5 Iaquinta for the victory. Felder evens. I've got him winning by second round, either second round TKO or third round or three rounds on points. The thing is about Iaquinta, four of his last five, by the way, are by TKO or KO in the third or second rounds. And so it's Diego Sanchez's first round. But Diego is the shadow of what he was, And I think I do see Iaquinta getting beaten here by Felder.
I see what you mean on that. My gut tells me to pick Iaquinta on this one, only given, you know, I feel like he's one of those guys who will be emotionally charged for the fight going into it, and I think that the kid looks good every time I've seen him in there. I think he'll have something. I don't know exactly what we'll see out of him in terms of his hands, because if he engages too freely with Felder, I think he might get clipped and go down. I think one way or another, somebody's gonna probably get knocked out. But I'm gonna go with Iaquinta just on the very abstract idea of him, you know, taking hard fighting in front of his Queens crowd there.
When you're wrong, next week or the next time we meet, I'll say I told you so.
It won't be the first time.
There have been very few times when you don't pick right. Women's strawweight, obviously. It's the rematch of Rosa Namajunas and Joanna Jędrzejczyk. Joanna looks... Yeah. I don't think she looked invincible because there were tailgates in her game in some places that people were finding openings, but she was very dominant over that kind of reign, that 2.5 year reign as the champion. Her own brand of nasty as well. I know she's a nice woman, but I'm not sure I always liked her antics particularly. But Rosa Namajunas looking like a savant the last time they fought. And in fact, when they faced off this time, clearly more respect for JJ champion this time from her, rather, for Rose. Again, another fantastic fight. The less emotional, calmer Jędrzejczyk kind of impresses me, Chuck. We know how good she is. We know how vicious she is. But we also know that Rose Gertrude Namajunas is very dangerous on the ground and has incredible abilities, not just in the stand-up and resilience, but also once you get to the ground. I'm not sure about this fight, but I'm picking the old champion, believe it or not. The odds with William Hill, Rose Namajunas 10-11, and wait for it, Joanna Jędrzejczyk 10-11 as well. So they can't split them, William Hill. Do you split them or not?
Yeah, man, it's funny because the roles are reversed a little bit on this one, because if you remember the first time, there was, Jędrzejczyk had basically been the bully in the situation and trying to psych out Rose Namajunas, but just basically, you know, cutting it down in terms of her mental prowess, like she'd be able to handle the pressure of the situation. Well, we saw how that played out. The roles are a little bit reversed because Rose Namajunas is basically the same fighter coming in here, the same demeanor, carrying herself exactly the same way, yet we're seeing a different approach, I think, from Jędrzejczyk. But I love her as a competitor, and a lot of people react differently to their first loss, especially when they get, you know, humiliated, I would say, in a in a lighter way, because the bottom line is she didn't perform the way we've seen her. She got caught and then she was gone in that fight, and it was just so it happened so quickly, like a snowball going down the hill. So I feel like what we're going to see is maybe her being a little more patient, sizing it up more, maybe creating that range, you know, using the stuff we've seen, her jab, her kicks, things like that, to keep that range, and trying to piece Rose apart a little bit more than trying to take her head off, because I think that that's the first thing that, you know, from that first fight that happened. But from Rose Namajunas, I wouldn't be a bit surprised if we see her kind of deke, as if she's going to stand with her with Jan Jacek again, and then try to get it to the ground, and try to grapple her and try to get a submission win this time. That would be a smart play, but obviously she trains with Trevor Whitman, and those guys, they love to prove that they know what they're doing on the feet. So this fight could really go any way, but I am leaning towards Jan Jacek, just given I think the first one, not a fluke, but I think the first fight, maybe she was a little too confident, and this time she'll put it together the right way and get it done.
I think she'll be a little bit more gun-shy this time, and I think she'll fight more technically. Obviously, it was a TKO after 3 minutes, 3 minutes, 3 seconds into that first round. And I think, like you say, I think she'll be more technical, tighter in the way she does it. I still think it's going to be a fantastic fight. Rose Namajunas has got this strange, as I say, savant quality about her. But I'm going to go for Jan Drejcik to break Namajunas down this time, Chuck, in a concerted way over 3 to 4 rounds. And I think we might see a brilliant 5-round battle or a late stoppage for Joanna Jędrzejczyk.
Yeah, likewise. I think that the further the fight goes, I really believe that it becomes more and more Jędrzejczyk's fight. Just because I think we've seen her make in-fight adjustments. And I think once she settles on a rhythm, she kind of figures out the range and the motions and everything, I think that we'll see her control the fight going forward. And I wouldn't be a bit surprised if, you know, third, fourth round, like you mentioned, she's just too much and overwhelms Namajunas and wins it through a TKO.
So the first time the UFC have been to the Barclays Center in Brooklyn, it's a brilliant venue. There's been a lot of big boxing there. Seventh time in New York State since the commission was created for, or that they joined the Athletic Commission, the New York State allowed MMA in. Great work by Mark Ratner over many, many years. God, I must have done 12 or 15 stories on that over the years. I'm sure you were the same. But that we come to the main event. It's not Tony Ferguson against Khabib Nurmagomedov, what many people felt was the best, in a way, pound-for-pound lightweight title fight of all time. I don't disagree with them. And yet, Ferguson's out. Still very bizarre for me. It happened on April Fool's Day, but it wasn't a foolish prank. Conor McGregor was the concurrent holder of the featherweight and lightweight belt. If Max MMA Blessed or Blessed MMA Holloway, the brilliant young Hawaiian fighter who lost to McGregor 3 years ago, can come and win this title now, he's already the featherweight champion. Conor McGregor's been stripped. The vacant lightweight title's on the line. Chuck, if he can beat Khabib Nurmagomedov, Max Holloway could potentially do what, or if he does beat him, he will do what Conor McGregor did against in the division and win two concurrent belts. Saying before today, it would be the perfect setup for those two to fight and for Conor McGregor to make his return, which I'm sure was occurring to you as well. Now that's a bit different. Now we're just talking about does Holloway beat Khabib or not? I'm gonna get some flack for this. If I'm right, I'll probably sound like a genius. But I've got a feeling with his little time to prepare, how relaxed he is as a fighter, how fast he is on his feet, how long his reach is, that he's a very big featherweight, that he won't have to cut weight, that he is very nimble, that his striking is better than Khabib, that Blessed MMA might rise in this moment.
Yeah, I would say that when they first made this fight, I thought a lot about everything you just said. The only thing I wanted, because we hadn't had this fight on our radar, really. We hadn't sat around contemplating Nurmagomedov against Holloway, because this was a super fight of sorts. And I would say that there's a little bit of an air of we're being cheated with a full experience because of the circumstances of what in which it's happening. We've had to wrap our minds around it on the fly. But just the no hesitation, sure, I'll do it, I'll fly all the way from Hawaii, and I'll take on this guy who's undefeated and has been so dominant. That speaks volumes to Max Holloway. And then you start to really piece it together, and you think, you know what? This guy is, he's a huge, huge featherweight. He's still going to have to cut a lot of weight to make the lightweight maximum or limit.
He's arguably the most improved fighter in MMA over the last 2 years with Ferguson.
For sure.
You know?
And it's crazy because the thing he would accomplish, it's almost the inverse or a more profound version of what Conor McGregor did, because Conor knocked out Jose Aldo in, 13 seconds. Max Holloway did it in the fourth round twice. You know what I mean?
Oh, he dismantled him.
And then, if he's able to go in and beat Nurmagomedov, well, that's a whole different kettle of fish than beating somebody like Eddie Alvarez. No disrespect, but that's a whole different accomplishment. This is a huge, huge fight for Max Holloway. I love the fact that he has been so good at preventing takedowns. I think I saw, Fight Metric had it that in the last 4 years, basically going back to the Clay Collard fight.
He's the least taken down fighter in the UFC or something like that.
Exactly. Yeah, 0 for 27 since then. And he's fought some guys who really wanted it to get to the ground. So there is more than just a glimmer of hope in kind of saying, like, hey, Max has a fight or a chance here. I think that it really is going to be interesting to see if Nurmagomedov can't get him down, what can he do against Max? But it really turns the tables on the fight very quick if he can't get him down.
There's a very clear game plan for him, and this is how it goes for me. He gets in there, he gets behind his jab, he almost boxes him. He boxes and moves, and he outmaneuvers Khabib. And if he can win the first couple of rounds, if he can get ahead in the fight, I don't think it matters if he's going to be taken down. Because he's got brilliant jiu-jitsu. I think he can almost equalize Khabib out. And I do really think this. I did an interview recently with Blessed, and he said to me, he thinks he can even go up to welterweight and fight. And he is big enough to fight at welterweight, believe it or not. He's kind of 6'1". Yeah. I mean, you know, you're a tall man. You're probably 6'2". He's about 6'1", Max Holloway. He's very big. I mean, he made Jose Aldo look like a dwarf, you know?
Yeah. And people forget, man, the guy's, 26 years old? It's just he started fighting so young.
Yeah.
We tend to think of him as this veteran, but, man, he's fought a lot of fights, but he's a very young guy. Still growing into his frame, really. I mean, I think he could easily step up to that realm. But what I love about a man is that he's taking this fight no hesitation, and I believe him when he's like, you know, if he were to win a second belt, that he would defend them. So that's the big thing.
Ferguson would be fighting him next. It would be Tony Ferguson against him next, for goodness sake.
Yep. And he wouldn't even, you know, he wouldn't bat an eye. And to me, that's what we need again. And, you know, we need to see that kind of fluidity at the top and guys so unwilling. And I feel like he is the exemplar when it comes to that. Like, he's ready for it. And he's a breath of fresh air in that sense, man. So there's still a very, very warm vibe about Max Holloway stepping up in this fight. And even if he loses, you know, you gotta applaud him for, just having the courage and the confidence or whatever you want to call it to say, like, yeah, why not? If you want to be the best, you go beat the best.
Well, Nurmagomedov is 1-5 and Max Holloway is 7-2 with William Hill. I'm going to stick my neck on the line and say that Holloway is going to do something extraordinary and that he's going to win this fight. It's going to be a 5-round fight and he's going to cling on and win 3-2 and get an unbelievable victory. That's my pick. 7-2 Holloway, 1-5 Nurmagomedov with William Hill. Give your pick, Mr. Mindenhall.
If that scenario you just mentioned happens, I would be thrilled for the sport because I feel like that's kind of the wild card element that makes it so fun. As guys come in there, they take their chances and they succeed. I cannot pick against Nurmagomedov until I see him. I know he's been a little susceptible on his feet. We've seen guys have some success as long as it can stand there. I love Max's chances of it standing, but if it goes to the ground, I think Nurmagomedov is the best guy. When he's on top, I think he's the best there is in the division. And it's my easiest way to see it is that at some point he's able to execute his will and kind of dictate his will and take the fight there. So I'm still going to go with Nurmagomedov. I don't know if he can finish somebody as tough as Holloway, but I could see him turning the tide at some point and just getting kind of a, you know, taking the fight into the deep water and basically getting a pretty one-sided decision.
Well, those are the fights we're picking. Thanks, Chuck. Conor McGregor, of course, person of interest, being hunted by the New York police as we record this podcast, the UFC Buzz podcast for William Hill. I'm indebted, as ever, to you, Chuck, you know, senior writer with MMA Fighting. As I say, maybe happier times when we talk next time.
I hope so, man. But I tell you what, you always make it a lot more fun for me, Gareth.
Always, whenever we can. You've got to be the regular guy on with me. It's as simple as that. Because when we're on together, weird shit happens in the MMA world. And that is the way it is. You've been listening to the UFC Buzz podcast for William Hill. That was Chuck Mindenhall joining me this week. Be safe. Enjoy the fights on Saturday night, whatever there are left of them. We'll see you next time.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.